Asri Report on Sabah al-Muslim.
For this week's Asri Report, we are joined on the line by Angelo Fake. Angelo, assalamu alaikum, welcome.
Wa alaikum salam to you and to the listeners.
While it's election time, there are calls for Janet Love's resignation while the IEC faces several court challenges. Is there a deliberate attempt, Angelo, to discredit the institution ahead of the May elections? And if so, then what would be the motivation? Why?
So my sense is that parties and their representatives are overpromising to potential voters what it is that they're likely to come out with at the end of the 29th of May. And so there is real concern around how it is that parties will behave in relation to not just this electioneering process, but also particularly on the day of the election, how are they likely to behave? And then in the wake of the results being announced, are they going to accept them or is there going to be contestation? This latest query about Janet Love is, I think, a long-standing history, particularly with the MK party, but there are other parties that have done similar sorts of actions around trying to prepare the ground for questioning outcomes, questioning results, questioning the institutions that govern our particular elections. The dispute between the IEC and the Electoral Court does not help this, and I think all IEC officials are going to have to be much more careful about how they proceed to make announcements and the conditions under which they communicate. The MK party has a particular objection to Janet Love, suggesting that she has a personal relationship with Jacob Zuma, but we're likely to see other parties also questioning the conduct of the IEC, particularly since it's now lost that Electoral Court matter and is going to the Constitutional Court to get clarity. Now, this is a legal rather than a political point, because the clarity has to be provided by the Constitutional Court on the interpretation of the constitutionality of the Electoral Act, specific provisions around who may or may not stand for elections, and people with custodial sentences over a certain number of months or years are disqualified from party lists. This is something that the Electoral Court overthrew, and so the interpretation of the IEC is what the IEC is seeking clarity on. So I think it's important for South Africans to remind ourselves the IEC has behaved impeccably in 30 years of elections, and very little has changed. In fact, the only thing that's changed is the Electoral Act, which has put the IEC under pressure to behave in a way that is, shall we say, was under pressure to make sure that these elections work properly. So because these elections are different, I think the IEC is under greater scrutiny and greater pressure. But everybody must remember, parties have party representatives at, you know, the electoral polls, the polling stations, and they have them at the Results Operations Centre. Parties have multiple opportunities to query results, votes, processes legitimately within the system. And so we need to be very careful when we hear politicians suggest that the IEC is behaving inappropriately, that they must be able to back it up with evidence. And we've seen this in previous elections when Helen Ziller, as head of the DA, queried the finding of ballots that had been thrown away. And that got resolved by the IEC very, very quickly because the DA observer at the polling station where the ballots came from was able to indicate what had happened at the counting point.
Now, the Patriotic Alliance has formed an alliance with five small Western Cape parties, promising to take the Western Cape from the DA. How realistic is this? Is it just pipe dream electioneering promises?
So as I said in answer to the MK question on Janet Love, my sense is that Gayton McKenzie is promising more than he could possibly deliver. The five parties that he is in an alliance with have no real presence in the Western Cape. They come from rural eastern Western Cape. So they're from the eastern half of the province, from very small towns. In those towns, they often don't even have representation in the local legislatures, the municipal legislatures. And so how it is that this combination of six parties will unseat all the other parties who actually already have presence in the provincial legislature is unclear to me. My sense is that this is rhetoric, and I think also one of the other things that happens is it creates the false impression that one has more support than one knows one has. And so if the results come in and you don't have what you promised people, you can then have grounds to use that uncertainty to suggest that there is some problem with the process. And we've seen this again in previous elections when people query results, because where they promised they would perform, they didn't perform. And it turns out that because of their presence as party representatives and because of the independent observers, their particular version of what had happened in the polling station wasn't sustained by the fact of all of the other observers. And we're in an age of conspiracy theory, so we need to be also careful that we don't take eyewitness evidence from multiple observers that cohere and dismiss it based on the conspiracy theory of the possibilities of things going on that didn't in fact happen.
Now, last week we saw the dissolution of the NSFES board. What is the significance of this and what does it mean for post-school education stability given other developments in the sector?
So the National Student Financial Assistance Scheme is a very important component of trying to bring equal access to tertiary education. And many people assume that this only applies to universities, but it plays a very important role in the TVET college systems, which is the technical education and training that is so necessary given South Africa's developmental needs. What we've had over the last few years is a whole series of corruption, maladministration issues applied to and alleged against the NSFAS system and various officials. What we saw in December last year is a crisis in governance and administration at the NSFAS in which the minister was supposed to intervene. He only finally intervened by dismissing the board and seeing the chair of NSFAS resign. Now, these have echoes for me around the way in which this process is working, with the way in which Bathabile Dlamini and social development with the Cashmaster Pay Services ended up in Parliament with a special investigation and very many court judgments against the minister. Because here was a service provider who was supposed to do the kind of work that allowed for direct payments. Alerts were raised in December last year that this was not going to work. And given that the university year and the academic year for TVET colleges would begin in January, one would have assumed that the minister would have an urgent intervention to ensure that this does not affect how this works. Now, because people didn't get the money that they were due to pay their university fees, this has knock-on effects for those particular students being able to continue their education. Because the NSFAS money is not just to pay your university fees, it's also meant to help you transport yourself to and from the college or university where you study, to help you sustain by eating food, by books, etc. If you, by this point in the universities here, still weren't able to do those things, it affects your ability to perform academically or to attend classes or to learn. Secondly, this has consequences for the stability of the sector because if these institutions, these colleges, are not paid the money, then the work that they need to do to ensure that people are trained and educated can't be done. Now, we've seen other forms of crisis within the higher education sector where the minister was also very slow to act. The crisis at the University of Fort Hare, which led to assassinations, the kinds of problems we've seen at the University of Zululand that did in fact lead to an assassination of a dean. And so the concern that one has is that, like the Minister of Basic Education, the Minister of Higher Education sits in a portfolio. The President sees these kinds of things and does not seem interested in removing these people from their positions of power. They've superannuated in these posts. This is not Dr. Nzimande's first attempt at this ministry. And so I think, one must lay the buck stops with the ministerial official who is expected to oversee and manage the processes that allow the sector to work. And he must hold his DGs to account. And we must hold the minister to account for why it is that the situation got into the end of April instead of having been dealt with between December and January, given how important post-school education is for economic development, for social stability, and to ensure that our municipalities, our towns and our cities have the technical personnel trained and capable of doing the work necessary to not just maintain existing infrastructure, but fix the infrastructure. And here the crisis in the TVET system is probably much more alarming, or should be much more alarming, than the crisis induced in the university system.
All right, Angela, as always, thank you for your time. Really appreciate it.
Shukran.
That was this week's SR Report with Angelo Fick.